Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Donut Dynasty. Nah, pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Yeah, pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty.
Diagnostic, popped it, now your team is the topic. Eitan and Stompy as a team, they're unstoppable. All bold, but no bold, it is roll in a roll that I'm told. Come a bowl to a cockpit. And I just hope there's no leaks, yeah. I ain't changed my oil in weeks, yeah. How'd I get all of these stains on my seats, yeah. Only mechanics that I trust cause it's free, yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. It's my dynasty team and it's got a couple needs. Is it this, is it that, is it picks, is it bad? Do I even have a chance, do I got it in the bag? Let me know.
Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty. Nah, pop the hood, tell me what you see. Nah, pop the hood, tell me what you see. Yeah, pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty.
Diagnostic, Gnostic, Gnostic.
Thanks for listening to the Dynasty Diagnostic Podcast. Tune in every week for a thorough inspection of the Dynasty landscape to learn how recent news affects your roster and to gather strategic tips and tricks to give your squad that turbocharged boost it needs. Please welcome your head technicians, Eitan Mosia and Sam Lane.
What's going on, guys? Welcome to the shop. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the Dynasty Diagnostic Podcast, a part of the Dynasty Trade Calculator family of podcasts, and brought to you by bestfantasyfootballleague.com as well as Fantasy Data. My name is Eitan Mosia. You can find me on Twitter at Etan Mosia. You can find my co-host, Sam Stompy Lane, on Twitter at FF Stompy. And of course, today, as usual, as always, we have one of the true legends in the game, one of the true legends of the community, and OGs still producing some of the best fantasy football content that you will find anywhere. You can actually find this man. He is the senior editor at Football Diehards. You already know who I'm talking about. I already gave the bag away by mentioning that, but this is a man that I am sure you guys all know, you all love. Please join me in welcoming Bob Harris.
Hey, thanks for having me on, guys. OG, old guy. I am that.
Not necessarily where I was going with that. But yeah, man, it's an absolute blast to be able to talk to you. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Really, really appreciate it. We're going to get right into it here, but before we do, I want to make sure that anybody listening to this podcast is following you. So if they're not, if you're not listening out there, you need to be following Bob Harris. You can find him. He is the Football Diehard on Twitter. All right, so again, I really need to know, you've been doing this for a long time. You've been doing this for 20-odd years at this point.
Make him sound older. Jesus.
It's not hard.
Been doing this for 300 years, Bob.
Well, it's 3,000, but okay. I'm not going to, you know, I quit counting about 300. So, yeah, no, it's like
575,600 years you've been doing this, we've seen.
Jurassic Bob Harris, they call me.
What has changed in this community? It's so dynamic. It seems like new things are popping up left and right. What do you think has been the biggest shift in the fantasy football landscape? And what do you think the next steps are?
Well, since I started, I started playing in 1986. I started my business in 1993. The biggest change was the arrival of the interwebs. Shocking development that. Because honestly, you know, we were all kind of cruising around. I mean, I started getting information on CompuServe, which kind of tells you how, you know, when things were happening back then. And it was like in the second year of doing it that one of my subscribers, I literally sent out, you know, mailed newsletters and faxes. I use faxes, fax broadcasting. And one of my subscribers said, hey, you ever hear of this thing called the World Wide Web? And I said no, because nobody had. It was like a brand new thing. But it didn't take long to figure that out. And I think, you know, correspondingly, you know, I think the NFL and, you know, newspapers, media, it just that kind of got the ball rolling. And once the NFL realized, you know, they went from being very, very ambivalent. I'll say it kindly. They were ambivalent. They hated it. At first, they didn't know. They associated it with gambling, which at the time, obviously, that's changed too, but not a good thing. So it just took a little while. But once the NFL figured out that people who played fantasy watched every game until the very last second, and you know they started getting some demographics and numbers on the kind of spending that fantasy people did, they kind of blew their wind in the sail a little bit more, you know, as we hit close to 1998 or so. And then it really grew from there. And I mean, and from there, you know, the internet gave birth to everything. And I think probably still the most important thing that's come along is the commissioner softwares, right? Kevin Austin, the late Kevin Austin, you know, who went on to ply his trade at My Fantasy League, you know, started out with the CBS commissioner. That software kind of revolutionized how we all play, and it allowed us all to play online. It allowed it to be easily scored. The drafts were, I mean, it just, I think commissioner software, league software has been the biggest development over the course of my 26 years. And it just keeps getting better. And the enhancements and refinements and advances in that technology are the things that are that continue to drive it and will continue to drive us in the future.
Do you think that we find fantasy's influence begin to get to the top where we actually see networks focused primarily on fantasy content and maybe even in-game stats and descriptions for the players in real time as we see them do these crazy, crazy feats of athletic prowess?
Yeah, I think we're already seeing that, and I think we'll see it more. I mean, I know the NFL, you know, there's some stadiums where, you know, that data is being presented. I think Levi Stadium comes to mind. But I just think more and more we're going to be able to, you know, and I've seen people working on this where, you know, you can make in-game substitutions, things like that. I'm sure all that will come at some point, the daily game. Look, where there's money, there is innovation. The daily game brought that, you know, especially, you know, there was a run right when they started when they were throwing around a ton of money. And money brings innovation and makes things better. It just happens that way. And so we'll see. And maybe now some of that's going to go over to the gambling side of the table. But I think it'll still benefit the fantasy aspects or, you know, the things that we're doing. The gambling innovations will work in our favor as well.
I hope so. I'm looking forward to it. All right, so before we get into today's 5-point inspection, we're going to quickly take a break and speak about some of our partners over here at the Dynasty Diagnostic and at the larger Dynasty Trade Calculator Network. Fantasy Data. Do you want 20% off of any of their subscription services? If you do, then you wouldn't be listening to Dynasty 20. That is the code that we have for you today, Dynasty 20. You can find this on all of the Dynasty Trade Calculator podcasts. What this code will allow you to do is it will give you access to all of their tools over there at Fantasy Data, to all of their amazing content producers over there at Fantasy Data, to their efficiency and player performance metrics, everything that they have over there at Fantasy Data, you can get for 20% off. All you have to do is use that code. Let us know that you did. Let them know that you heard it here. And let's get back into our regular scheduled programming. So now, let's go ahead and shift into this week's 5-point inspection. Tom Brady signed a 2-year contract extension just a few days ago. And I just wanted to ask, is this a good thing or a bad thing for the pass catchers out in New England? Obviously, Tom Brady is the GOAT. He's one of the best of all time, one of the best to do it for a very, very long time. But it looks like Bill Belichick is taking a little bit off of his plate. So I really wanted to ask what this meant for guys like N'Keal Harry. Braxton Berrios still comes to mind. Obviously, Jacoby Myers is getting some hype out of camp. Maurice Harris was told to be the other starting receiver opposite Julian Edelman at one point. Is this just musical chairs, or do we think one of these guys is going to emerge? And does Tom Brady's contract help or hurt that?
The subsequent reporting is it's basically a 1-year deal. Brady, it voids after this year. Brady becomes a free agent next offseason. They can't franchise him. That's part of the deal as well. That doesn't mean he's moving on. It just means he's year to year. which you would expect for a guy who's heading into his 8,000th season. He's been doing his thing as long as I've been doing mine, right? So 42 years old. I do think, you know, I think that changes the calculation on these guys from a dynasty perspective, because the end is coming for Tom Brady, right? So right now, what's the most important thing for a wide receiver in New England? To be where Tom Brady expects you to be when he expects you to be there. If you are not, this does not work. Ask Chad Ochocinco, right? Ask any number of guys over the course of time. I mean, you have to be locked in. So as we look right now, we're hearing N'Keal Harry's maybe struggling a little bit. You know, I don't know that that's going to be a long-term thing. Maybe he can earn Tom Brady. But it sounds like Jacoby Myers already has, right out of the chute. So that's worth noting. But I just wonder how persistent it's going to be if Tom Brady's not there. Maybe we're going to be next year wondering how much trust Jarrett Stidham has in these guys, right? So, I'm maybe getting in front of things a little bit. It might be 2 years down the road. But I do think it changes the long-term horizon for these guys.
Yeah, I agree. And it's going to be – I mean, we saw what the Patriots did last year. They started to run the ball more. Gronk fell off a cliff, so they weren't throwing a ton. Edelman was out the first four games? Eight games.
Yep.
So, I mean, maybe it was a perfect storm of things, but I think that's the way the Patriots are going to go. They have two young running backs, plus James White, who's in his prime. They have Edelman. And then, like Bob brought up, I mean, it seems like N'Keal Harry's struggling a little bit right now. And the Patriots just haven't done a good job, and whether that's because of the quarterback or Bill Belichick, they haven't done a good job of drafting rookie wide receivers and having them become useful. They're usually the guys that take like the Chris Hogans and make them startable or stars. And I just don't know if we're going to see N'Keal Harry thrive this season because of that. Now, could it be, let's say Tom Brady next season is still there and they've had a year to work on timing and stuff. I could definitely see him taking that second year leap. I just don't like the outcome for N'Keal Harry this season. Especially as a rookie. So,
and some of that may depend on, you know, Josh Gordon. He's filed for reinstatement. If he comes back, he's got a little better connection already built in. Look, the switch can come on for Harry at any time. I mean, I don't want to sit here and preclude him from having a strong rookie season. Maybe even, you know, given the big body and Gronk's absence, emerges a red zone weapon. But yeah, I think betting on any of these guys is a little bit worrisome. And just especially for the long term, not knowing what Brady's, you know, how long the long term is for Brady.
Knowing that Braxton Berrios can be a quality slot receiver and that Jacoby Myers himself offers 6'2", at least that frame to him, along with a college dominator that was 47.8% at NC State, 93rd percentile, do we think that maybe there's some competition, serious competition, for the Patriots' first-round draft pick that might have him take a couple years to really break out into what we all thought he was going to be drafted in the first round?
Yeah, I think that's possible. I mean, you know, look, I think, you know, we're working on a week's worth of data here, of serious data, right? We've had the entire offseason, I grant you that. But a lot is going to be, you know, be determined in the next 3 to 4 weeks. And so I wouldn't rule anything out yet. But certainly, as you know, as we watch as fantasy owners, and we tend to look down the drinking straw, something I try not to do. I try to keep a look at the big picture. And, you know, part of that big picture is draft capital expended on a player. You know, their college pedigree, but you mentioned that Myers has that as well. So it's definitely one to look. The Patriots are kind of unique in that, but I think the point is well taken about the running too, because it seemed like, you know, a little more last year, but this has been an ongoing thing for the last, what, 3-4 years at least, where, you know, the pass, they kind of transition from a pass first to a run first team anyway as the season wears on. I think by design, probably, right, because of the weather and, you know, where they're at in terms of their season. So it wouldn't be surprising if they start out more run heavy this year for me.
All right, let's now move on to our next point. What if I told you that you could draft a receiver with 4.35 speed, 120.6 speed score, 98th percentile, and a 10.51 99th percentile catch radius for almost free in drafts? Would you be interested, sight unseen?
I say I probably already have a lot of him on my rosters, but yes, of course.
No, not me, because I can see the name.
You know, so let's remember, let's throw in the part where, and let's say he spent an entire year working in the second team with the quarterback that's now his QB in their new home.
There we go. There we go. Even boosting him up some more. It's Chris Conley, people. Chris Conley is the apparently a hot guy out of Jacksonville Jaguars training camp, outside of show favorite D.D. Westbrook, of course. Do we think that Nick Foles can support multiple receivers in that offense, or do we think that this is kind of what Devonta Parker does every offseason and we're going to hear good news until we actually see the bullets start to fly?
That might be a little bit of a reach, but you know, look, this offense wants to be run heavy, right? I mean, we know that. So I don't want to get too far in front of this one. I just think, as you know, a late round flyer, especially in best ball, it's either Conley or Chark, right? So I know I can hear Sam is very skeptical, and as well he should be, right? This is the Jaguars. It's hard to imagine them supporting a high-end production for more than one receiver, and I think that will be Westbrook. And DJ Chark is still in the conversation for that number two spot. He's flashed at times, too. My SiriusXM co-host Mike Dempsey works at the Jaguar Stadium because he covers them for the for the 1010XL in Jacksonville. So he's there a lot. He sees a lot of what's going on. I like Conley. I have investments in him, but only as a best ball flyer, nothing more.
Yeah, I mean, and really, if you tell yourself a story or create a narrative for him, you're talking about a team where Keelan Cole disappeared and Eitan wants to cry.
I do. Marquise, it's sad.
Marquise Lee tore an ACL, and he might struggle to come back early. And then DJ Chark's a second-year wide receiver. Then, I mean, at the very most coming out, he was raw talent because of that speed. And you could look at that the pass catchers there, and he could very easily be the second, in my eyes, the second best pass catcher there. You could definitely tell yourself that story because there's a lot of question marks about those pass catchers, including the tight ends. So the only one that I really trust is Didi. If you're taking Conley, let's say, in a 16-round redraft at 16, and he somehow pans out, you're getting a lot. I mean, it's a low risk and probably middling reward at best, but it's still, I mean, you could get a reward out of that.
Right. I think we're always all, you know, all of us who follow the game of football, we understand the old cliche is true. There's a reason they say there's two things you can't coach, size and speed. Chris Conley has more of those than a hell of a lot of guys. So, you know, for that alone, there's some intrigue. But according to Devonta Parker, size and speed alone do not a receiver make. So we should probably keep that in mind as well with Conley. Although I do think Conley can run routes. I mean, he's flashed at times. And I think the thing that we're hanging our hat on, you know, Sam mentioned the narrative the story we're telling ourselves. But he worked with Nick Foles on the second team in Kansas City. That's it. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, just to kind of go into the statistical profile, Chris Conley is an interesting case. His ADOT has kind of gone up and down season to season. Its lowest point was last season, 8.4 yards in Kansas City with Patrick Mahomes. But in 2017 with Alex Smith, his ADOT was 14.4 yards. So it's one of those situations where, yes, sample size is probably the biggest trap here, so you should take all these numbers with a grain of salt. But he's also a guy that excels at target depths. From 5 to about 22 yards, he's above average at all of those, according to Josh Hermsmeyer's AirYards.com. So there is talent here. I'm personally skeptical because if this is something that you couldn't do in Kansas City, like all of you guys were saying, why would you get it done in Jacksonville? But, I mean, there definitely is some meat left on the bone here, I think, if you're willing to take a flyer on him super-duper late. All right, so now let's go into our next major talking point here, and this is actually going to be a funny one for Sam because he made fun of me for not wanting to talk about this guy just a few weeks ago, and now he's all of a sudden relevant. Very, very, very lenient usage on the word relevant there. But outside of Lamar Miller in Houston, Demarre Crockett seems to be the guy that is going to get those next carries. If not him, Caron Higdon. Do we think that there is value outside of Miller on that team, first all? And then once we get past that point, which one of Crockett or Higdon is going to be the main backup to Lamar Miller, who could benefit in the event that Miller goes down?
I'll let Sam take the first whack at this one.
So really my Demarre Crockett came up, I believe, it was brought up by Matt Waldman, and I kind of looked into him. And really, if you look at the very least, his freshman season at Missouri, he had over 1,000 yards rushing. And then there were some issues with his coach at Missouri, and he just wasn't used as much. But here's the issue with Demarre Crockett is that he's an undrafted free agent. So, I mean, how many of them hit? Yeah, we saw Philip Lindsay do it last year, and that was amazing because nobody does it. But he steps into – well, he doesn't step into a role, but he's got a chance at a role as the RB2 behind Lamar Miller. Miller's getting up there in age. We know running backs get injured. I mean, again, this is one of those you can tell yourself a story. As long as they don't sign someone like Ajayi or Ware, he could step into a role if there is an injury on or an injury to Lamar Miller.
I'll go with short term, maybe, long term, nah. Yeah. I think I'll go with and by the way, although I worship at the Church of Waldman, I'm not sure I'm in on Crockett. Just, yeah, he's got good size and the speed, and there's been some production, but I think the running back that's going to back up Lamar Miller is not on the roster. So I'll kind of take a wait and see approach on this. In the meantime, give me all the Miller I can and redraft him best balls because he is dirt cheap and the workload's going to be there. The problem for him is the same as it's going to be for everyone else in Houston, which is the offensive line. It has to get better, but obviously, that hasn't slowed the passing attack down much. One thing it does is slow Miller down as a receiver because he is actually a really good pass protector, and they keep him in instead of doing some of the things they'd like to do with him in the passing game. So, but I think Miller in the sixth round, you know, coming off where he's coming off and redraft or best ball, I'm all right with that.
Crockett's got some size-adjusted speed to actually, you know, give you some pause. He's 105.0. 80th percentile size adjusted speed, and he actually has a 72nd percentile burst score, 122.4. Yes, obviously the offensive line is going to be the major issue out in Houston in the event that a guy like Lamar Miller, who doesn't get injured often, goes down. Maybe it's something to kick the tires on really, really late in drafts. But yeah, I think the real story here is Lamar Miller. And I'm not sure if this increases Lamar Miller's value all that much. I think it just solidifies his status atop the depth chart. So maybe there's extra stability with a guy who, you know, has finished running back to the last several years pretty much under the radar year over year over year. So he's unsexy. He's not exciting. He might just fill in that RB2 role and help you win your fantasy league this season. So keep your eyes open. Make sure that you are at least considering Lamar Miller in drafts this year. All right, so this is a topic that has been often discussed on a number of other podcasts. I haven't brought it up here yet just because we've talked about each of these guys individually, but now we're actually going to put them head-to-head and have a discussion on how we think number 4 through number 6 is going to shake out when it comes to tight ends in fantasy football. Obviously, your candidates are O.J. Howard, one of the most dominant per-touch tight ends in the league of all time, honestly, last season. Behind him, we have Evan Engram, who I think is the number one wide receiver for all intents and purposes on his team. And we follow that up with Hunter Henry. If Melvin Gordon sits, then that's just going to open up tons and tons of targets for that intermediate position. If that happens to be Hunter Henry's role, even though it looks like Keenan Allen might be battling him for those same targets, then we can see a real boom season from a guy like Hunter Henry. So order these guys? How are you drafting them? Why do you think they'll finish in the order that they do? And understand, we're probably wrong anyway. Chances are, of these top six that we think is pretty solidified, maybe we only get three or four actually popping up here at the end of the season. But we're going to try to prognosticate.
I'll go Ingram, Howard, Henry. And only Ingram, only because I expect a monstrous, you know, target share, especially early on. There's no Golden Tate. We'll see if Sterling Shepard's ready to go week one. Either way, talked to Ryan Dunleavy yesterday from NJ.com, and he was making some pretty bold predictions about target shares. And I don't disagree. I think, you know, we've seen it before. When the receiving core is depleted, Evan Ingram's very busy. We also know the worry with Evan Ingram is he's got to stay on the field, and that's remains a concern. I think O.J. Howard is probably the best player of the bunch. I'm going to just, you know, I know Bruce Arians knows how to use talent, and he'll see the talent, he'll make use of it. But, I mean, you can go back to all the way back to, what, Heath Miller. And, I mean, you know, even Heath Miller's best seasons came after Arians left, right? So he just, you know, his stated thing for Arians is, you know, you block first and you catch second. And maybe that'll totally take a flip-flop when he sees, you know, as he figures out what he has in O.J. Howard. But there's a lot of other mouths to feed there. I think that's the same issue for me with Henry. And in addition, I talked to Eric Williams from ESPN, and he isn't sure that they're going to just throw him right into the fray, into that full role right away. He thinks they may, you know, take it slow with him. And, you know, maybe they won't be able to out of necessity. But with Mike Williams, you know, coming on, Keenan Allen obviously being Keenan Allen, they got good receivers, certainly an Austin Eckler or Melvin Gordon if he shows up out of the backfield. Maybe they won't have to force him, you know, into the full workload early on. And I think that, you know, that wasn't a concern for me because he came back for the postseason, but he didn't really get a target then. It was very minimal. I mean, the fact that he's on the field is a huge positive. I would agree. I'd like to get a little better feel for how they're working him back into the mix over the next couple of weeks before I totally nail that one down. But that's the order for me right now: Ingram, Howard, and Henry.
I think I'm on the same page there. Ingram, without, and mind you, this is over the last two seasons, without Odell Beckham Jr., produced over four PPR points more per game when Odell Beckham wasn't on the field versus when he was. And like Bob said, now you have questions about whether Sterling Shepard's going to be ready with that fractured finger, or is it thumb?
Thumb.
Yep. And then obviously Golden Tate's not going to be there for the first 4 weeks. So, we always say it in fantasy, volume is king. And who else are you going to be throwing to? You're going to have Saquon and you're going to have Evan Ingram. So you can expect a ton of volume to go to Evan and Ingram, at least in those first 4 weeks, probably longer, just because he is an athletic freak that has a lot of, can produce a lot of mismatches. So I think, yeah, you have to have Ingram one there. OJ Howard, I mean, I get it. He's had the best, most, or the highest yards per attempt for any tight end in the last two seasons. He's up there and among league leaders, I believe. But there's also the fact that Jameis Winston likes Cameron Brate. I mean, we've seen it in the past, and I think we saw it last year. When Jameis Winston was in the game, Cameron Brate got more play. And that's true for 2017 as well. So I see some questions there, but I have to believe he is the third best pass catcher. He's also an athletic guy that can create mismatches. And then like Hunter, I think I'm ranking Hunter Henry six just because again, like Bob said, you just don't know what he's going to produce this season, especially early on. I mean, is he going to be the same Hunter Henry that we saw in the past? Is he going to be dealing with some soreness, some compensation injuries from that ACL? We don't know. So that's why I got him six as well.
Yeah. He's a young man, and Eitan could probably say this. Is Evan Ingram not faster than Odell Beckham? Did he not time faster at the combine, like a hundredth of a second?
Yeah, Evan Ingram is an absolute freak. He's a wide receiver masquerading as a tight end at this point, and I think that's what a lot of people forget about him. In fact, if you look at his first season versus his last season, what you'll find is this is a guy that's actually maturing into the role of being a consistent NFL player. His catch percentage rose 13% last season. of course, in a smaller sample just because of the injuries that he suffered last season. But his racer, a metric made by Josh Hermsmeyer, jumped significantly. It jumped from 0.71 to 1.64 this past season. Yes, his ADOT dropped just because Eli Manning was Eli Manning, and you know that's probably the detracting factor against people that aren't necessarily sold on Evan Engram this season. But I mean, for me, he's already shown that he can be efficient. He's shown he can be hugely productive in his rookie season. That's something we don't often see from tight ends that are just beginning their careers, even though we've now seen it from guys, from a lot of guys, honestly. We've seen flashes, but we haven't seen the type of dominant season that Evan Engram had. And I understand that a lot of that was probably due to him being in an offense without many other targets. Now he's going to have to battle it out with Saquon Barkley. But honestly, as you guys were saying, if you look around the rest of that team, I just don't think there's anybody to truly compete with him for a heavy, heavy workload. So if he can stay healthy, he can get those target share numbers that are going to put him over that 100 target threshold for tight ends that gets them in that top five territory relatively easily. So I think Evan Engram has a real shot of being this year's breakout tight end if he hasn't already broken out. I think people have soured on him a little bit in the last season or so. O.J. Howard, I love O.J. Howard. I'm not going to say a word against O.J. Howard. I will just say this. I don't know if tight end four, like he's priced at currently, makes sense when looking at the wide receiver one that Mike Evans is going to be, the wide receiver two that everyone believes Chris Godwin will be. I get that there's a lot of targets available, but like you mentioned, Bob, Cameron Brate still is there, still exists in that offense. Jameis Winston likes throwing to Cameron Brate, as you were saying, Snoppy. So I think you just have to understand that there are a number of ways where this can not go quite as right for a guy like O.J. Howard. And as you were saying before, Bob, yeah, if this is going to be a situation where one guy is going to have to stay into block, which actually might be the case on an offensive line as terrible as Tampa Bay's, then you might need to have to pass more to a guy like Cameron Brate just because he's not going to be that inline presence that O.J. Howard can be and is today. So I think O.J. Howard's versatility hurts him a little bit here. And for that reason, I just don't think he sees the same target share that we'll see from guys like Evan Engram and like Hunter Henry myself. So I'd actually probably put O.J. back at six. But looking at Hunter Henry, for me, yes, I think this relies a lot on Melvin Gordon. If Melvin Gordon sits out, I just see a buttload of targets that are going to go the way of Hunter Henry. If he can be half as effective in the end zone areas and the red zone areas as he was a couple of seasons ago, then we can start to see a real, real star turn here. And I'm beginning to see that more and more concentrated target landscape out there in Los Angeles that I preach every single time I'm giving any type of advice for fantasy. You want to chase those offenses that are only going to pass it to a few guys. And I think we're starting to see that materialize out in Los Angeles. So I think that's something to look for. And I think that if I had to rank these three in a row, it would be Evan Engram 1, Hunter Henry 2, and I would round it out with O.J. Howard. But of course, all three of these guys definitely do belong in their current standing in their own tier as it stands. Let's now go on to talking about another tight end. Tight end getting some serious hype this offseason, even though the guy backing him up seemed to be getting more hype just a few months ago. But I don't think there's a battle anymore between Foster Moreau and between Darren Waller. It looks like Darren Waller is starting to run away from that job. He came back off of the injury that he suffered. And from all sources, we're just hearing that he is absolutely dominating guys in one-on-one practices and is showing that he can be that safe underneath target for a guy like Derek Carr, who is known to throw it short. So what do we think Darren Waller's potential is this season?
So, look, I feel like he's a guy that I've been drafting for a while. He's got a little shoulder issue right now. But even the most recent reporting from The Athletic, he's unguardable in camp. Converted wide receiver, size, speed, you know, kind of a, you know, Jared Cook. Now, I think the plan is to throw the ball downfield more. I'm just guessing here. But I think with Tyrell Williams and who's that other guy? Antonio Brown.
He's got frostbite. Call him Iceman or something like that.
Mr. Ice Chest. Yeah. look, I think I like Waller. I think he's a guy that you can wait until the end of your draft. A lot of people don't know that much about him, although he is gaining a little bit of credibility here. I think John Gruden talking him up has been the thing. And you're right. I mean, we're all expecting. Jared Cook was what? A guy that showed up four games a year until Gruden figured out how to use him. And maybe part of that was their inability to throw deep or the. How about this? Their inability to pass protect so that Derek Carr could throw deep. And, you know, so Jalen Richard and Jared Cook were the de facto wide receivers one and two on that team by the time it was all said and done. So that's not going to be the case this year. But I do think Waller is a guy you can maybe pick a riskier, higher upside guy, said Jordan Reed or whoever, and, you know, maybe come back around. And if you want to spend another pick late on a guy like Waller, I think that's very suitable. And maybe you have a little upside there, too.
So we were talking about Evan Engram being a freak of nature. Think about this. Darren Waller is 3 feet tall, or 3 feet. Yes, 3 feet taller. He's 9 foot. three inches taller, 20 pounds heavier, and he ran a 40 that was 4/100ths of a second behind Evan Engram. So he's bigger and as fast. I mean, I don't know what else you want from a guy at that position. I mean, he is like Bob said, and I actually kind of believe this. He's unguardable because he's huge and he's quick. And also, like Bob said, he's stepping into a big role from last season. Now, they didn't have the wide receivers necessarily that they do now, but Jared Cook, I mean, received 101 targets. And, I mean, we've talked about John Gruden's offense being a little bit more of a lateral passing offense than a vertical passing offense. And I think that gives a lot of opportunity to Darren Waller this season. So he's stepping into a big role that was used last season, and he probably will have opportunities like Jared Cook did last season. So I definitely like him as a top 10 tight end this season if he's going to play the snaps.
Yeah, and on Foster Moreau, I think we saw as much of him last night in Hard Knocks as we'll see the rest of the season.
Oh, geez. Just going back to Darren Waller, just a few weeks ago, he was being drafted in the 26th round of FFPC drafts. Those are high-stakes league drafts. We've seen his average draft position rise all the way up until the 21st round thereabouts. Would you be comfortable taking him a little bit earlier than that, or do you think that you would still wait to get something maybe a little bit more solid like a Jordan Reed before him?
Right. I think what I like him for is if I, you know, wait a little later and I draft, maybe I go ahead and I get Jordan Reed and Tyler Eifert, and I know they're going to be broken masses of wounded flesh at some point, and I'm going to need a body on the field with some upside. It's going to be a guy like Darren Waller.
Yeah, and I like pairing him with somebody like Noah Font, who we think is going to be good, but he's a rookie tight end, and you could have those spots with Darren Waller that could step in or even become your tight end one, and then you have possibly two great tight ends.
All that said, I'm drafting Mark Andrews, but the hell with everyone.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You can stay. We love you now. You've taken over the podcast from now on. But I think you also have to understand this is a guy that's not a rookie. He is a veteran. He is 27 years old. He's going into his age 27 season. So there's some experience behind him, and I think that will make the transition a little bit easier for him than some of the younger guys that we bring up often on this podcast. Let's now move into our final point today. Running backs don't matter is commonplace at this point. In fact, it's become so common that it's kind of cliche and its meaning is a little bit lost because everybody says it and everybody uses it to an almost extreme extent. They don't necessarily understand that, yes, it was said, but it was said in a way as to evoke a reaction. not to say that, yes, in every circumstance, you cannot run the football, that it doesn't make sense. I don't believe that's what the quote or the saying is really getting at. That said, it's really starting to have marked effects on the pocketbooks of guys like Melvin Gordon, like Ezekiel Elliott, like every running back that's going to get an extension between now and the end of this collective bargaining agreement, which ends after the 2020 season. So two guys coming up from contract extensions the next couple of years are running backs that kind of play wide receiver for their teams. We have Alvin Kamara on one side and Christian McCaffrey on the other. My question is this: do we think that the whole running backs not getting paid scenario is going to flip on its head with these two guys? Do we think that because of their duality and their ability to be their team's wide receiver two at the very least, do we think that that adds zeros to their potential deals, or do we think that this is kind of a set in stone, done and dusted type thing, and that running backs are just going to continue to be forced into committees and continue to be devalued because of the numbers that we have that back up EPA and passing success versus running success in most game situations?
There will be exceptions, right? And maybe McCaffrey and Kamara are prime examples of that. But for the most part, in a league where C.J. Anderson can roll off the couch and they can stretch a jersey out over his ass and get him on the field, and he can run for 300 yards in two games or something ridiculous for the Rams. I mean, that's the problem, right? And we know it as fantasy owners. Every year, a running back nobody drafted wins somebody a title, right? So, I mean, and that's – you know, not only not lost on us as fantasy owners, that's also not lost on the NFL, you know. So when the Justin Forsetts or whoever, you know, I mean, this, we could go back, I could take this back to Nick Goings or Ruben Drones, or, I mean, this is not a new thing, right? It's been an ongoing thing. So in an era where, you know, the kind of money that these guys are commanding, I mean, I think it makes more sense to pay other positions. That said, you know, they're, like I said, there are going to be exceptions. The cap is going up, and who knows if the gambling, you know, works, factors into that. Who knows how high the cap may go at some point. So maybe these guys will all, you know, make huge money and everyone will be quite happy. But that's the problem right now, right, is anyone, you know, there's a guy on every college team who can move the chains and with the right blocking and the right scheme and an opportunity can get the job done.
I would like to see a study that looks at three down running backs and whether they do matter, because you would think that in a passing league, a guy who can run between the tackles and is a pass catcher like Kamara, like CMC, like David Johnson was, and maybe again. And that's why I think that, like, Damian Williams, and I know this is just an ongoing discussion at this point, but that's why I personally think Damian Williams is more valuable than Carlos Hyde, because Damian Williams in his career has been a better pass catcher, and I believe wasn't college, but I'd have to look back.
This is true, but let's look at his career. I mean,
no, and that's fair. I mean, it's a fair critique of it. I'm just saying, personally, like, if I was looking at Hyde versus Damian Williams, I want the guy that can run and pass catch with some of the best.
Right, and I would agree with that wholeheartedly, but, you know, I mean, for a guy who, I think, what's his top season last year was, I mean, 50 carries is the most he's ever had in a season, right? So, I mean, you know, 24 targets, that's his, or 32 targets are the most targets he's ever had in a season. So he is like the definition of journeyman. So this is basically proving the point that it's more about scheme and opportunity. And I think when I'm drafting running backs in fantasy, I'm not drafting a player. I'm drafting opportunities. I'm drafting path to workload. I'm why are we all so keen on Dalvin Cook this year? You know, not that he wasn't already in a good position, but we look at the scheme that's going to be implemented there, and we're hoping that he stays healthy. But honestly, if somebody else steps into that role, said every Houston team during the Gary Kubiak era, Dominic Davis, Steve Slayton, I mean, whoever. Arian Foster, I mean, you know, guys show up and it works out pretty well for them. So I just think this, you know, big picture, this is going to be an issue for guys who play that position, who who want to make huge money.
Does the collective bargaining agreement need to change for you when it comes to running backs?
No, the market kind of wins out in the end. I mean, look, if you're, you know, there are still guys making pretty damn good money, right? And I think there will always be special players who do it. And so, no, I don't know that you're going to be able to make that adjustment, you know, at the position. I think the league, you know, they've made adjustments over time, like quarterbacks, you know, or just the rookie salary cap, right? The slotting that they use so that, you know, there are no more Sam Bradfords, you know. So you know, the veterans want their share, and maybe that's more of what it's going to be, just a bigger share to the veterans in general. Maybe the franchise tags go up and maybe it comes more prohibitive or less prohibitive to, you know, franchise a running back or to pay him, you know, that kind of franchise money. But I think as a percentage of the cap, they're going to lag behind a lot of other positions, and most of those are going to be, or some of those will be, quarterback, tight end, and wide receiver, I'm guessing.
Yeah, interesting stat that you're going to see in one of the articles that posts pretty soon on NumberFire about the Ezekiel Elliott situation is the 2019 season is the first season in the last four seasons that we've seen the running back position group as a whole on a team on average be more than 3%, I believe it was 9% of the total cap of that team. That is crazy, crazy low. And I understand it. I get it. The numbers back it, but it seems that tight ends are even being paid more than running backs as a whole right now. This season, we've seen running back position group being paid as a whole, I think something in the 4.6% of cap range, just completely. And that's at about $8.6 million to the entire position group. We're seeing tight ends get paid $9 million to their entire position group, but we're seeing more and more targets being pulled from those tight ends and given to those running backs. So we're giving players who are averaging or who are having to be used in more and more ways and be workhorses in more ways than one, less and less for their hard work. I just don't know about the fairness just from a human perspective of that type of situation.
Nobody cares about fair. That's the, I mean, that's just how it is, man. So, I mean, you know, maybe you and I do, and maybe, you know, people out there, but certainly the NFL, that's not how it's working. And you're right. You're throwing a guy out there to get in 20 plus car collisions every week. And so by the very nature, the position, you know, grinds players down and gives them. So that's, I mean, you look at the Todd Gurley deal, for example. I mean, and, you know, I don't know if that knee is going to be a greater issue as we go forward, or maybe it's just going to be where it is and be manageable, and that money won't be thrown away. But I think that's the concern teams have is, you know, you pay a guy like that for anything beyond a year or two, and you're likely to be playing someone else at some point.
Well, so the other part of this is, like, you could see teams paying these guys, but only like teams that have guys on like rookie contracts at QB. So
right, that's for me the biggest thing right now, Sam. Right. Is if you have a quarterback on his that can get you, and that's why I'm always thinking, why are they not playing the rookie quarterback? I mean, it's such a huge advantage. We've seen it with Seattle. We see it over and over now. You know, that's how you build a winning franchise. And if you can find the right quarterback to do that, it allows you to do a lot of things. There are always going to be exceptions at running back, guys that are going to get paid. But I think the vast, you know, the percentages aren't in their favor.
All right. Thank you so, so very much for joining us, Bob. Really, really appreciated having you as a guest. Everyone out there listening, go ahead and follow Bob Harris at Football Diehard. Go ahead and go to footballdiehards.com, read his team's work, read all of his work, listen to the Football Diehards podcast that he does with Justin Lanero, and you can go ahead and make sure that you're following this man on Twitter to be better at fantasy. Thanks so much, Bob.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate you having me on.
So now we're going to get into our Dynasty Diagnostic, but before we do that, let's go ahead and pull into our bestfantasyfootballleague.com pit stop. What's going on, guys? My name is Eitan Mosia. You know these sultry sounds from the Dynasty Diagnostic. What's happening, DTC family? I am here to tell you about bestfantasyfootballleague.com. It's actually been around for 19 years, and what these guys do is they allow you to play in any league format that you can dream up. If you want to play in a one quarterback, three running back, four wide receiver league, these guys got you. For Dynasty Leagues, best ball leagues, redraft leagues, whatever your little heart can desire, bestfantasyfootballleague.com has got you this season. And on top of that, money is even no object with these guys. If you want to be the type of dude that's putting in $20 into this league and wants to see if these players work out, you can do that. If you're the type of guy who's willing to take a stand on the hill of a guy like Damian Williams and tell everyone that he is a top five back and willing to put $2,999 behind that assertion, you can do that with bestfantasyfootballleague.com. All you have to do is go ahead to the Dynasty Trade Calculator website. You can click the banner at the top. You can also click join the league on the right hand side. It'll take you straight to bestfantasyfootballleague.com, and you can play against me, Stompy, John, JP, Izzy, all kinds of people from the DTC family on any of their leagues this upcoming season. Again, bestfantasyfootballleague.com, guys. I expect to see you there. See you on the next one. All right, guys. Now we are back. We're going to plug in the analyzer and get to this week's Dynasty Diagnostic. Our episode 40 roster was submitted by Mike Alex. You can find him on Twitter at FFEinsteins. Please be sure to give him a follow. And if you want to be part of next week's show, all you have to do is follow the podcast at Dino Diagnostic. Smash that subscribe button and leave a review at the link in the description on iTunes and on Podbean. If you want to get to the front of the line, just give our sponsors, bestfantasyfootballleague.com and Fantasy Data, a look and let us know about it. So our roster is a 12-team, 1 point per reception, start 1 QB, 2 running back, 2 wide receivers, 1 tight end, and 2 flex rosters. So just a 1 quarterback league for us this week. We're going to switch it up today. Instead of starting at the top, we're going to start at the bottom at tight ends. We're going to start with Travis Kelce, Mike Gesicki, and Jeff Heuerman. Travis Kelce makes any tight end group elite by his own presence because he's the number one tight end in the league. He has a role as the number one target above Tyreek Hill in a pass-happy offense, in an Andy Reid-coached offense with Patrick Mahomes as his quarterback, and he's 29 years old. So he's going to be around for at least another 3 seasons or so. I think Travis Kelce is all you need at tight end. Behind him, Gesicki and Heuerman, I mean, I'm fairly confident Gesicki is going to play games this season at some point, so I'm not necessarily going out there to spend too much on tight end. But if I had to, I would just be picking up one of those waiver wire guys that you can get. Maybe somebody that was never picked up, or somebody that you can get for a fourth, like a Delanie Walker or something in that range, just to kind of hold you over long enough to make a long-term plan, hopefully next season in the rookie class.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I don't really know what to make of Mike Gesicki. The Miami Dolphins pass catcher is kind of wide open. I mean, we like Albert Wilson here. We saw some good things coming from Preston Williams in their first preseason game. Devontae Parker, I'm not expecting much from, though my partner over here decided to pick him in the 15th round in Scott Fishbowl.
I did. I did do that.
Kenny Stills, I've never been a Kenny Stills guy, so I just don't – I'm not expecting a lot from him. So Mike Gesicki can – I mean, he's an athletic freak. He's in the second year as a tight end. I mean, maybe they use him like a I can't even compare him to Rob Gronkowski because I don't think he's that type. But and I completely agree on picking, I don't know, a later, even just an older tight end. I think Delanie Walker was a perfect idea. I still think guys like Darren Waller, a lot of hype coming out of camp. He's still going really late, if at all, in drafts. I think he was like the 21st tight end off the board or something like that.
Does the injury and the potential of Foster Moreau worry you at all for Darren Waller?
I mean, no. I mean, Foster Moreau was going to be a project in itself. I'm not overly concerned about the injury either. There doesn't seem to be a lot of news coming out of camp about the injury, so I'm not concerned about it. And him going late, I think a combination of Gesicki and Waller probably just a good idea, because like you said, you only need Kelsey except for that one bye week. So yeah, completely agree. You're fine at tight end. You don't really need a legitimate backup like a Mark Andrews or Noah Font or whatever because of that. So you just need that bye week fill in. So looking for older guys or guys that are going really late is probably the best idea for you.
So, I mean, just kind of looking ahead here, cheating a little bit, looking at teacher's notes. For me, Travis Kelce on this team might even kind of be a sell candidate just because I think that you can get somebody capable back and something to add on to your team on top of that that maybe is a little bit younger and gives you a little bit of youth at another position. Looking at the wide receiver specifically, I'm not sure if we're going to be comfortable going into the season with just the guys we have listed here. So for me, I would at least give that a thought if you can get a good price for Travis Kelce. The hysteria around him probably isn't the same thing as it was just a few weeks ago when we weren't sure whether or not Tyreek Hill was going to play this season. But I do think there's still enough there because, like I was saying before, he is the number one target in the Kansas City passing offense. So let's move on to wide receivers. Keenan Allen, AJG, Kenny Galladay, Albert Wilson, Devin Funchess, Emmanuel Sanders, and guys that play football. I guess I'll include Bashard Perriman because he happens to be on a good team for what it's worth. But Allen, AJG, Galladay, Wilson, Funchess, Sanders, what do you think about that, Sam?
I would have felt a lot better if AJG hadn't injured his ankle, gotten surgery, and would be out until probably week four-ish. Because now you're moving Galladay in as your number two, which is fine. I think that's fine, but it's your depth after Galladay that worries me. I love Albert Wilson. Think he can be a wide receiver too. After that, Funchess is rough. Sanders is rough. And then, like you said, there's a bunch of trash behind that. So you're very, without AJG, you become very shallow at the position. Now, when AJG comes back, that could be your strength. Like I said, I just can't, I can't do it. I don't like the depth here. And I think a good option is to trade Kelce away. And just looking further ahead, looking at picks, you can actually probably get a Noah Font with your 2019 picks here. You have 201, 202, 203. I don't think you're going to reach for him at 1.04, but if he falls, and he very well could fall into, especially because this isn't tight end premium, into the second, if I were able to get Noah Font there, I'd be trading Kelce to upgrade that wide receiver room, like you said.
Absolutely. And at 104 these days, I feel like, you know, 104 maybe is the last of the somewhat assured picks. You have Kyler Murray. We can assume that he's going to go in that range, probably even in a 1QB in this particular draft class, because this draft class is, that's scary. But after him, or before him, however this happens to go, Josh Jacobs is going to go, Montgomery is going to go, Sanders is going to go. N'Keal Harry was kind of in this range before, but seems to have dropped out just a little bit just because we have not been hearing great things about him from Patriots camp, and we've been hearing that other receivers like Maurice Harris, the guy that flashed off.
Jacoby Myers.
Jacoby Myers?
Don't worry, I've done that. I've done that one plenty. Who's this guy? Well, he just caught two touchdowns, so we probably exactly need to know his name.
Like Jacoby Myers flashed in the preseason this last week. It's not necessarily going to be N'Keal Harry's show, and this was always going to be a low-volume offense, and Julian Edelman was always going to lead that wide receiver core, regardless of how this went. So I would think that, you know, this might be a situation where if you weren't necessarily sold on maybe Miles Sanders getting enough volume early on to be justified at that 104, that you might want to trade down, grab a guy like Noah Font, and then double up on it and maybe get a Deebo Samuel a little bit later in that first round as well. If you're me anyway, I know a lot of people don't value Deebo that way. But that's kind of what I would do in this situation. But let's now move on. Running backs, we have Alvin Kamara, Damian Williams, starter Damian Williams.
I'm gonna just start throwing shade all day with that garbage.
I can't understand the quickness to turn against a guy who did nothing wrong and was just out with a hamstring injury for a few practices. That we saw all around Twitter. It was just people taking victory lap after victory lap after victory lap on Carlos Hyde, on Darwin Thompson, who looked good. But, I mean, this was always Damian Williams' role. Even the committee thing, the committee nonsense that Reed was saying the other day, isn't this something we expected? I mean, all we really wanted from Damian Williams was something in the range of 12 to 15 touches on the ground and maybe another four added to that through the air, and he's gonna get that regardless, even in a committee. So I don't understand why people were so quick to turn against a guy that just a few days ago was a third round pick.
Well, it's because Damian Williams was bad in Miami, okay, but that was like a year ago or 2 years ago. I mean, it was dumb. I mean, they were using the, well, Carlos Hyde is out there with the first team in the first preseason game. And it was like, well, yeah, duh. Williams just came back like 2 days ago. They're not going to run him in the first preseason game. Holy God, the amount of victory laps people were taking. And then some people, not to name names, had the audacity to say, oh, it was just a joke, guys. You guys need to let that go. No, just you got eaten alive. And sure enough, 2 days after the preseason game, what news are we getting? Damian Williams has taken all the first team reps and Carlos Hyde had like a couple or a few with the second team. Okay, so we're back to normal. I got you. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, normal never left. Normal never left. People go crazy with the preseason swings. It's news in preseason. If it's news, it's likely bad. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's damning. It's just something that you have to take a look at and you have to be aware of if it's something that inches closer and closer to the season. Like Amari Cooper, perhaps. Some news just came out today about Amari Cooper. Plantar fasciitis is what's on the docket for Amari Cooper. We thought it was just a bone bruise. I tried to trade him to Shane Manila just before this because he loves Amari Cooper. And I found out the news as he found out the news, and that was the end of that trade negotiation, unfortunately. But what does that mean for Amari Cooper? Let's just switch this off of running backs entirely. This is how I like most conversations anyway.
Apparently we are just derailing this entire thing. Fortunately for me, in our listener league, my division is slow at drafting. So I was going to take Dak Prescott with my next pick. If Amari Cooper struggles with plantar fasciitis all season, he's obviously not going to be effective. I wish we were had Ethan on hand or Matt Betts on hand so we could talk to them. But I mean, that takes away basically Dak's two best weapons. So I was like, well, gonna not do that with Dak. I thought Cooper's upside was top five wide receiver, like, because that's where we were at last season. He was wide receiver three after he moved to the Cowboys. But I mean, if he's struggling with plantar fasciitis, I know exactly how that feels. Again, I'm not athletic, I'm not a National Football League player, but I have to imagine it's uncomfortable and it's going to affect his burst and his route running, etc. So until I know more, I'm avoiding drafting Cooper and Dak where they are right now.
Coming from the grade A bona fide athlete that is Sam Lane, people, you saw, you know what I'm talking about here. We should be worried about Amari Cooper this offseason. but going back to running backs, Kamara, Damian Williams, the starter Damian Williams, Kenyon Drake, Carlos Hyde behind them, Jalen Richard, Wayne Gallman and CJ ProSize. He still exists? Like, is he still a thing? Is he going to get, like, you know, 50 sure, carries this year?
I'm sure their truthers are out there. He's more of a wide receiver at this point, so.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a fun time, that one game that CJ ProSize was good in and people went crazy over. It was a really, really fun time. But Alvin Kamara, Damian Williams, Kenyon Drake, if you would have asked me this question, I don't know, 2 weeks ago, I probably would have felt pretty good about it. I know my partner wouldn't necessarily feel that way with me because he likes to build by running back, but with three of the top 24, I'd be pretty comfortable with that situation. It doesn't necessarily look like we're living in the same universe as we were just 14 days ago, though. We're hearing a lot of information about Kalen Ballage being a lot more involved in the Miami Dolphins running game. And if that's the case, then a guy who was already starved for opportunity in Kenyon Drake seems to be in the same spot as he was last year. So while I think he'll finish with numbers that will make him look like a solid RB2, I don't necessarily know if you'll be comfortable playing him on a week-to-week basis if he's not going to be getting the starter's touches. So I think this is a real position battle that you need to watch, unlike Damian Williams and Carlos Hyde. So go ahead and give me your best Kenyon Drake take, Sam.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, Kenyon Drake last year showed, I think, a lot of people what he can do. And I think a lot of us thought it was an Adam Gase thing. But now that we're hearing that Ballage has taken a lot of starter reps or first team reps, it's probably going to be a full blown running back by committee approach. And so I think his ceiling is what he produced last year, as long as Ballage is healthy. So, I mean, that's fine. If he continues to be part of the passing game, he probably can put up top 24 numbers, but I would expect more top 36 numbers, RB3 numbers. I'm just wondering if the new coaching staff there coming from the Patriots is trying to establish a Patriots like running game running back room a la, or using guys like James White as a pure pass catcher, using Rex Burkhead or Damian Williams as kind of the do it all guy, using Sony Michel as the, I guess, quote unquote workhorse. And I wonder if that's what we're seeing here, where Ballage is going to be the workhorse, Kenyon Drake's going to be the pass catcher, and then Gaskins comes in as kind of the do-it-all guy. I don't know. That's a best guess at this point. But yeah, I mean, like you said, I would have wanted another running back here, but I would have felt fine with those top three. Now, not so much. And again, this is where depth comes in. I don't think you have great depth. You have that KC backfield locked up, I think. Even if Williams were to go down, which I don't think will be an issue, Hyde's there, but that's going to be probably a more running back by committee approach with Hyde. Gallman is going to be great if Saquon Barkley goes down, but with those thighs, I don't think Saquon Barkley is going down. I don't know what Rashard is with Josh Jacobs there. It sounds like Rashard's supposed to still have a role, but Josh Jacobs has been a great pass catcher in college, so I just don't know what to make of Rashard. So yeah, I think you need to add another running back here. And with 1.04, you could add, and I hate this, you could add Miles Sanders probably, or one of Miles Sanders or David Montgomery, but I don't know necessarily. I mean, it could, and like Eitan had mentioned with N'Keal Harry dropping a little bit, it could go Jacobs, Sanders, Montgomery, or a combination of those three, and you could lose out with 1.04. So if one of those running backs is gone, I'm probably trying to trade 1.04 for another running back, and I don't know who you could really get there. I don't know if you could get Chris Carson there. And this is just me spitballing based off of ADP currently. But yeah, somebody who I think will get a majority of the touches. So yeah, look for somebody like Chris Carson. Maybe like you could trade for a Mark Ingram if you think you can compete this season, which I think if you make the right moves, you can definitely compete this season.
Yeah, the guy that I'm going for here is a guy that I just picked in the DDCL in the Dynasty Diagnostic Champions League that we'll talk about a little bit more next week. Tevin Coleman, the potential PUP status of Jerick McKinnon going into the season essentially means he's going to be out 8 games at a minimum. If that's the case, then this is a Tevin Coleman backfield backed up by Matt Breida, who of course will work in, but this makes Tevin Coleman, behind the San Francisco line, one of the best value running backs out there. I think it was Rich Rebar who I saw the other day that was putting out a couple of tweets saying that Tevin Coleman should be a 6th-round pick if we're hearing what we're hearing from San Francisco. Last season, it did not matter what body was running the ball for San Francisco. In that scheme, in that zone running scheme, we saw success consistently. It didn't matter who was at quarterback. It didn't matter if they were stacking the box. It didn't matter if there weren't weapons on the outside. They could get yards on the ground. If they can do that again this season, if they can open up some wide running lanes for Tevin Coleman, I think Tevin Coleman can explode. The only real reason that we were supposed to be fearful of that San Francisco backfield is because of all the bodies that were populating it. But if a guy like Jerick McKinnon is not going to be there for the majority of the season, then I think this is a whole new ball game, and I think that's somebody that you can still get at value right now.
Yeah, I like that. Another one that I just came across, Darius Geis. His value has kind of, I mean, it hasn't bottomed, but it's dropped. And if you could somehow get Darius Geis with the 1.04, I think I'm going to say something that's, I think the news of his demise is overblown. Yes, he had the hamstring injury and he had the ACL, but the hamstring issues go along with the ACL recovery, and he should be 100% entering the season. And a lot of people are going to say, oh, well, what about Adrian Peterson? I think Adrian Peterson is an insurance policy. I still think that Darius Geis will get a majority of the carries this season, and he was a great running back in college, and I still think he can be a great running back in the NFL.
It's overreaction time, Sam. We're going to overreact on a few things that we saw in these last preseason games. We're going to talk about Daniel Jones doing Daniel Jones things, apparently, which is going out there and just being a baller. 5 plays, 5 passes, 5 completions, and a touchdown. And then we're going to talk about the exact opposite in Dwayne Haskins, who everybody thought should go to New York, ends up in Washington and puts up a dud. So obviously we cannot, take this one game, this one performance as the end all be all for these rookie prospects, but it is our first glimpse into the window of what might be for this season for these particular guys. Dwayne Haskins is not a mobile quarterback. That Washington offensive line is, I don't want to use a cuss word right now, but it's that. It's what you're thinking. And it's not going to get any better anytime soon. They're going to have to trade their left tackle who is unsatisfied with the team, not even because of the contract, but because of medical decisions that were being made on his behalf, essentially. He just doesn't trust the team anymore. And the potential trade on the table is looking at a team like the Houston Texans with a potential swap for Jadeveon Clowney. That's what I've seen out there. However, the hope was that Haskins was going to be able to step back and throw it short and kind of make his money that way. If the offensive line is going to move him off his spot every time, or if the lack of an offensive line is going to move him off his spot every time, and he's not able to make those pinpoint accurate passes, do we still think that this is an offense that's even going to be functional this season? I mean, we were talking about Darius Geis. That's how we came into all of this. The one worry with Darius Geis, or not the one worry, but one of the major worries with Darius Geis was that he was going to be on a team that was going to find it very, very difficult on the offensive side of the football and very, very difficult to get in the red zone. I think that's getting a little bit worse now, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I don't like this offense as a whole. But having a guy like Darius Geis, I still think he can be effective. I don't think RB2 or RB1 is in his range of outcomes this season. Because I think they're going to ease him back in a little bit. And I think we all recognize that this is just not going to be a good offense. But I still think RB2 numbers could be in the cards for him. I'm going to just use every cliche in the book right now. So, for this team in particular, as your RB3, I think that's perfectly fine. I mean, you can mix and match with Drake and Geis, somebody like that, that will be an RB3. And mind you, you only have to start two running backs. You also have two flex, but you only have to start two running backs. So there could be a mix and match situation with Geis. But yes, I completely agree. This offense looks horrendous.
Yeah, it's a worry. It's a definite worry out there for Darius Geis and for the rest of that Washington offense. I just hope that Trey Quinn can figure out a way to, you know, find himself some fantasy relevance. And if not him, then we see some at least flash plays from McLaurin. But let's now move to the most irrelevant position on this roster, just because it's a one quarterback roster, the quarterback. And we have Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston, and we can stop talking about the quarterbacks because
you never know, he might be a starter next year or this year. it's still a dogfight, apparently.
Yeah, it's interesting with Rosen. It's definitely gonna be a battle with a guy who seems to start everywhere he goes. Like, I wonder if a dude out of Harvard was smart enough. Fitzpatrick was smart enough to just get dirt on every backup quarterback that he's playing on every single team just because he can get them to sit out a few games every season and allow himself to just keep getting these one-year contracts everywhere he goes. It's hilarious how effective he is at that. But, I mean, Russell Wilson, just, I guess, in a vacuum from a pure dynasty perspective – pure fantasy perspective, at least for this season, while Schottenheimer is calling the shots in Seattle, he's not the same Russell Wilson. Like, J.J. Zacharyson has been saying this for a while. This isn't – I mean, this is an original thought, but this isn't saying that I'm the only person that's seeing this. I think he brings up a lot of good points. First of all, the volume's not there. Second of all, he's not running as much as he's run in the past. You look around his wide receiver room, it's just Tyler Lockett and a bunch of ifs, ands, could-bes, maybes, woulda, coulda, shouldas that aren't necessarily going to get it done this season. And we have that running game that has two monsters to go ahead and take that work on the ground. So we're hearing that there's going to be more passing to the running backs in this type of offense. If that's the case, then maybe we can see increased values out of guys like Chris Carson and Rashad Penny. But I don't see it happening for Russell Wilson as a top-flight QB1. I mean, I'd be surprised if he finishes any higher than he did last year, which I believe was the back end of the QB1 around QB11, QB12. I think he's in that same spot, and he's not being drafted as such.
Yeah, I agree. As long as Schottenheimer's there, they're gonna run the ball. I mean, we saw that in the Cowboys game. They just continued to run. But they had the lowest passing attempts in the league last year, 427. And I would not be surprised to see Russell Wilson throw for less than 450 passing attempts again. And I do not, and as much as I like Russell Wilson as a QB, I don't think he can keep up that efficiency. He had 35 touchdowns last season on 427 pass attempts. That touchdown percentage is ungodly. And it's well above his career of six. He had an 8.2 touchdown percentage last season. Career is 6%. So definitely one of the bigger regression candidates. And I mean, he's going to be good, but he's not going to be. I would, again, and this is another thing, I would not be surprised to see him finish outside of the QB1s this season. So if there's somebody in your league that, and this hurts me because it's Winston and I hate Winston. But if there's somebody in your league that thinks highly of Wilson, I'm trading him and I'm okay with Jameis Winston as my QB1, especially in a one QB league.
You should definitely be okay with Jameis Winston, because Jameis Winston is a top eight quarterback this year because his weapons are ridiculous.
I'm going to vomit.
His weapons are absolutely stupid.
You're going to make me vomit live on air.
We did see Chris Godwin go ahead and get a touchdown over this last weekend. I can only assume that the hype train is just going to keep on rolling with him and that we're just going to see more and more and more buildup as we edge closer to the season. My question is this. I mean, is there a reality in which Chris Godwin is the Tampa Bay wide receiver one, or that it's becomes an Adam Thielen, Stephon Diggs situation where they're both essentially number ones in an offense that is going to be passing the ball quite a bit?
No. I mean, the reality is if Evans gets injured, but no, I don't think so. I think Evans gets the 25-26%. Godwin gets 21-ish, 22-ish. Howard gets 18% of the target share. But yeah, I mean, Evans is just too good. And he's going, and this is a vertical passing game. And I just think that Evans is going to eat in that vertical, in that Arians offense.
I was just trying to goad you into saying something ridiculous there so I could knock it back entirely.
Nope, not me.
Yeah, Evans wasn't targeted in that sequence of events, and so I'm sure there are going to be some people out there that are saying that Chris Godwin is the new wide receiver one on that team. No. Mike Evans, just an automatic 1,000 yards every season since he's been a rookie in the league, which is unheard of. People need to stop playing with Mike Evans. I don't care about his yak. I care about his A-dot and the fact that he comes down with all those crazy passes. Even last year, his catch percentage rose something like 10% over his entire career, which was in the 50s. I think it was at 64 last season. He's getting better in the league. Imagine that. Imagine somebody getting better at their craft as they get older and more experienced at their craft. Oh, my God. Who would have thunk it? Anyway, this is a guy that you should feel the utmost comfort in having. I think I have him wide receiver 6, wide receiver 7 right now. I really think his realistic range of outcomes is all the way up to wide receiver 3. This is a guy that can be an absolute monster in this offense. I don't think that's going to take anything away from Chris Godwin. I think he's still wide receiver 2. And I would still say that OJ Howard, maybe he doesn't necessarily finish in that top 4 for me. I mean, I imagine drafting him there in dynasty leagues because that's kind of where you need to get him. But I think that, I mean, worst case scenario, he's going to finish, you know, tight end 8, and that's still going to be valuable on your team. So I think that with all of those weapons in that offense, with Justin Watson behind them, with Breshad Perriman along with them as well, I mean, even in the event of an injury, Jameis Winston is going to have the targets to get it done in a Bruce Arians vertical offense. All right, guys, so that is what we feel about this team. Now we get to the tough part. We get to the hard part here. We're going to provide our diagnosis. We're going to say what this team is in car terms. So, Sam, what is this team to you in car terms?
Oh, God. Like, I like your starting lineup pieces. It's just gets rough in terms of depth. And so what this reminds me of is somebody who doesn't really take care of their car, has like warped brake pads. So you, every time you stop, you feel like this stutter. And then like your oil is like 5,000 miles overdue and it's starting to turn into like thick muck. It can run and it can get you places for a little bit, but much like last episodes, it's just like you need to maintain this. You need to upgrade or change out your oil. You need to get new brakes. And I think that represents like your depth in running back and wide receiver. You need to get another running back. You need to get another wide receiver. And then I feel confident about this team. But your depth right now is lacking, and it scares me. I think you can compete with this team right now, but if something goes wrong, this entire season gets derailed.
Yeah. This is one of those situations where you kind of have a solid exterior, but there's nothing to be said for it. There's nothing under the hood that's going to make you smile. There's nothing really in the dash that's really going to make you think that you have some type of technology that's going to be beneficial in any way. It's almost stock. It's almost completely standard on the inside and just looks a lot better than it actually is. As Sam was saying, if something goes wrong on this team, I mean, you're basically driving with no spare tire with this roster. You're screwed. You're not going to have anything to cover that hole in your lineup, and it's probably going to be a lot more expensive to fix that hole in season when people are scoring points. So right now, I think you need to do everything Sam said. You need to get some depth at both running back and at wide receiver for me before you can really compete with this team. And I think you have the requisite picks to do so. We touched on it earlier. You have 3 second-round picks. You have a first-round pick. You have a third-round pick on top of that. Now, I don't know if this rookie draft has taken place, but I wouldn't necessarily participate all that much in this rookie draft. I would trade those picks for guys that we can have to come in and be impact players today, because I think that team needs it. Because you have that top-end talent for me, assuming that AJ Green comes back healthy, to compete with anybody else in your league. It's just a matter of being able to kind of go with the flow in season and be able to take those situations where something unpredictable happens and you're down a player for several weeks. So just kind of keep that in the back of your mind. But I think you did a really good job building this team, building this car together, and I think it's going to run quite well. All right, so that is it for today. Please make sure to follow your head technicians, Eitan Mosia, for myself, and FF Stompy for Sam. Go ahead and follow Bob, our guest earlier today, at Football Diehard. And please make sure you turn into the Football Diehards pod. You can find me at Fantrax and at Number Fire. Go ahead and follow what Sam's working on at FF Statistics. And please go to the Dynasty Diagnostic podcast feed on iTunes and give us a 5-star rating and review. Really helps the podcast grow, helps us find those fellow technicians that want to join the family, that want to be part of the special, special thing we have going on, and really trying to build this pod up into something that we think in a few years, or we hope in a few years, is going to be something that's still around. So thank you for making it to the Dynasty Diagnostic Service Center today. Please be sure to keep up with your scheduled maintenance and catch us next time to ensure quality performance. See you on your next visit. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty now. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty. Diagnostic popped it, now your team is the topic. Eitan and Stompy as a team, they're unstoppable. All bold, but no bold, they just roll in a roll that I'm told. Come a bold to a cockpit. And I just hope there's no leaks, yeah. I ain't changed my oil in weeks, yeah. How'd I get a lot of these stains on my seats, yeah. Only mechanics that I trust cause it's free, yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. It's my Dynasty team and it's got a couple needs. Is it this, is it that, is it picks, is it bad? Do I even have a chance, do I got it in the bag? Let me know. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty now. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Pop the hood, tell me what you see, yeah. Pop the hood, tell me what you see. Tell me what you see, it's the Dynasty. Diagnostic, Gnostic, Gnostic, Gnostic.